Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Today, we begin our series looking back at the year that was in MMA. So along with our pro wrestling series we're doing, I'm doing a four-part series and a look back at MMA, which is the granddaddy of them all. That's what kind of started this whole thing. And no better person to help do that than Grandpa Dez himself, Paul Fontaine of WrestlingObserver.com, and a Fight Game Media, where he's doing a lot of good things, including a podcast there, and I believe some writing and some other stuff, and he's doing his own YouTube show. So we talk about that on the show as well. But what we do is we look back at the first 3 months at a time, a quarter of a time of the MMA calendar. So this is episode one of this. So we look at January, February, and March. And a lot of things happen, as they always do. We had a brand new UFC heavyweight champion crowned. We expected a big title fight to come out after that, which still hasn't happened yet, so we discussed that. More champions made, big events planned. Conor McGregor came back and lost, so we talk about that. We got to talk about Conor. It's our mantra here, WrestlingObserver.com. And yeah, as always, it's a fascinating look at kind of how COVID affected things, how injuries affected things, big plans, big proclamations by Dana White, and some things that just never end up happening, and a lot of things that did. So let's get into it. January, February, March, and the MMA calendar, 2021, myself and Paul Fontaine. Let's look back at it starting now. Well, everyone knows that the year is coming to an end. If you listen to my year in review wrestling series, you know that for sure. At this point, by the time you're hearing this, January, February, and March are all out there, and we are ready to start with the granddaddy of them all, which was the year in review for MMA, which I started doing, I think actually since the first time I started this whole series years and years and years ago. And it's our annual quad look, so to speak, at the year it was in MMA. We do a quarter of time, January, February, March, and for the umpteenth consecutive year, joining me to help me run through all 4 months, it's the one and only Paul Fontaine of this here website. Does a lot of great work for ratings and so on, all those updates, and also with Fight Game Media. He does the In the Clinch podcast with Ryan Frederick, also of this very website, over on Fight Game, and does Grandpa Dez, this new YouTube sensation. And yeah, Paul, it's been a year since we actually talked, and since then you've, just like Howard Stern, a media star.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny because this is like doing the show with you was my first exposure to all of this. And then over the last year, it's, you know, I've just been doing a lot more. And it's, you know, it's just it's all kind of a natural extension of itself. So a little bit less of the written stuff and a little bit more of my voice and even my video now with the YouTube show. So it's been really cool. But I mean, like, you're the one that kind of helped get me started. So kudos to that. And even like Ryan, you know, who at one point, you know, probably could have been doing this along with us. I know, you know, you had tried to get him on the year end shows at one point, and then it just, you know, you couldn't get it to work. And then now he's doing a show. So it's, you know, it's just all, you know, I love that Wrestling Observer has given people platforms to kind of branch out from and do different things. And even though I'm not doing it for, maybe someday I will, but, you know, I'm not doing it for them. It's kind of, it gave me the kind of the platform to launch off of.
So, yeah. Good stuff. Cool. Good stuff. Yeah. I like it. Let's see. And we should just tell the people, Paul, you and I were just talking before the show, I'm going to be a guest on Grandpa Dez.
Yeah. So it's what it's called. If you haven't heard of it, it's Cup of Joe with Grandpa Dez. And if you're on the board, you know that's my board nickname, and I am a shoot grandpa. And so I basically sit down with people, friends, colleagues, personalities. I've had even a couple of people I didn't know. And we just sit down and we have a cup of coffee and we chat. So, you know, whether or coffee, water, you know, even if you want to have some gin, it's up to you. Yes. And we just chat, and wherever the conversation goes, it goes. It's, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes. I've got Brian Alvarez scheduled to go on a show soon. I've Garrett Gonzalez is on the show. That'll be probably dropping around the same time as this show does. And I've had a movie director on. It's been crazy. And then just some people that I know. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to having you on once things die down for you, maybe early next year.
Yep.
And yeah, and it's 3 times a week on YouTube. It's free. Just search Grandpa Dez in the old YouTube search engine, and you'll find us. And you'll see my smiling, happy face in my crowded rec room.
I love it. Yeah, and obviously, yeah, you can go to Paul's Twitter, Paul Ace Fontaine,
Yep.
and get the links there and all that good stuff. So, Paul, we begin,
Yep.
as for people who have not heard this before, where we do again, quarter at a time. We do January, February, March, a little bit different than the wrestling ones I've been doing. Initially, Paul, I was like, okay, maybe I can do the same thing for wrestling. There was zero chance of doing that because I just did January, and it was like 3 pages. I'm like, there is
I've been
zero chance.
listening to those shows, and they're great.
Oh, thank
And
you.
yeah, and yeah, well, Ethan on the first one and Brian on the second one. And yeah, I mean, you guys have as long as we'll probably do for 3 months, you guys did in 1 month, and so much stuff.
I
It's
know.
crazy.
And there's so many things like the, we don't get to, as I point out in the show, we don't do like, everything that happens on a Raw or Dynamite and things like that. And the one I was just recording in March, during the show, I completely blanked and had to include in the Shaquille O'Neal AEW Dynamite debut because we look at the more it's like the pay-per-views and kind of like those type of things, and for whatever reason, I as we're talking about something, I'm like, oh shit, forgot all about this, and there's so many things that happen, and there's always going to be bound to be like little things you may forget, but it's it's wild. And the reason I want to do that and the reason that I started doing these is, there's so many things that happen in the course of a year in our lives in general that we look back at some of the things. And I did this, I do the same thing when I go over these. I'm like, one of these we're going to lead off with, which is just, I scratch my head still. There's just so many things that happen we just forget about because there's so many things that we kind of move on to. It's good to look back and be like, how did we get to this point? And you kind of see, and yeah, that's why I love doing this. And that's why, yeah, I wanted to extend out to the pro wrestling brand as well. So let's start with January. And so this, what we do is, so kind of what I pull out is the two kind of two or three, if there are kind of biggest news items, happenings, events, that type of stuff during the month. And we got to talk about Connor as we always do. This is continued decline of the pay-per-view king, start of the year, UFC 257, Dustin Poirier defeating Connor McGregor by second round TKO. This was their rematch. First ever time Connor was knocked out. Also on this card, Michael Chandler making his official UFC debut in impressive fashion, knocking out Dan Hooker in the first round, setting himself up for a big next fight, which we'll talk about in just a few minutes. There was a huge streaming debacle with everyone trying to buy this fight and this event at the last minute, and ESPN Plus got overwhelmed. A lot of people couldn't buy it. People that had bought it couldn't get access to it. It was
Oh,
just a
yeah.
complete cluster. ESPN had put out a statement afterward. Luckily, knock on wood, it hasn't happened again. And I will say, I know that, Brian Alvarez tends to, you mentioned a minute ago, he tends to, complain a lot about having these issues when he gets other pay-per-views. I, knock on wood, have never had an issue at all. I usually buy ahead of time. If I know I'm going to get it,
Oh.
I'm like, okay, I'm just going to take care of it on like a Thursday or a Friday just to get it out of the way. But even accessing it, I've never had an issue at all, neither with Bleacher Report, not with ESPN Plus, never a problem at all. I don't know why, but again, knock on wood, that's just me. But a lot of people did, and could have cost UFC and ESPN some pay-per-view buys for sure. Afterward, Dustin Poirier said he was not interested in a Michael Chandler title fight. He just figured that Chandler just got there, was kind of jumping the line a bit. And yeah, I mean, I guess we'll start there.
Sure.
Yeah, Dustin Poirier picking up the win and obviously setting himself up for a really big year, which culminates or could culminate just a week from now in December. So thoughts on UFC 257?
Yeah, I totally forgot about that streaming debacle, and it seemed like it was pretty much confined to the West Coast. And I think because a lot of the prominent MMA personalities are based in the West Coast, like in terms of reporters, like a Dave Meltzer and some of the people that work for, the Bloody Elbows and those type of sites, they were the ones that were having the issues. So it got maybe a little bit more publicity than it would have got, because I think anybody in the East Coast or even in the Central, they weren't having that issue for whatever reason. But yeah, it was a huge fight, obviously, and that's I'm sure contributed to the issues. And McGregor being knocked out was, you know, I don't think a lot of people saw that. I know McGregor was slightly favored going into the fight. But in retrospect, I think what happened was the boxing may have affected his MMA, you know, in terms of, you know, the defense and the striking and all that. And then just, you know, like his tune-up fight that he had earlier the year before with Cerrone. I mean, Cerrone and McGregor, or Cerrone and Poirier, are on completely different levels. And mm-hmm. I think that we didn't really judge that correctly. And yeah, and McGregor was stopped, and he couldn't defend the leg kicks. That was the big thing. And that was something that Cerrone doesn't really do. And obviously in the boxing training, that wasn't going to be in effect either. So yeah, it was big. I was surprised the Poirier Chandler. I think what they were doing, looking at, was an interim title fight, and Poirier just didn't want that fight for whatever reason. So I think what that ends up doing is just stirring up something, because eventually they'll fight at some point, and maybe there'll be a title on the line when they do. But yeah, I you know, huge fight, and then Chandler debuting with that TKO. I mean, that was exactly what UFC wanted. He couldn't have looked better. It was arguably a bigger, you know, for him, like I he came out of that almost to me as a bigger star than Poirier, just with this promo and with how good he looked and everything. I mean, obviously Poirier got the bigger win, but Chandler getting that huge win in his UFC debut was great for him, and you know, and set him up. Now, unfortunately, he'd lose his next fight, but I think he's set. He's one of those guys that he's going to be a big draw, and people are going to be looking forward to his fights, because, you know, you're going to get, you know, just a killer thing. So it's a big night for UFC. Did incredible buys, I think like 1.3 million or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it could have been higher, as you said, you know, with the streaming debacle. So good start to the year for UFC, and what ended up being, it's looking like their biggest year in terms of pay-per-view buys maybe ever.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. With COVID, and we'll get to a lot of this stuff, some of the things they had to overcome. And it was a pretty tremendous year. With McGregor, I think it comes down, he just doesn't fight enough. You know, and I've said before, he doesn't want to be one of the guys. He doesn't want to be like the guy that's going to take on, you know, the number 8 lightweight challenger on a, you know, fight night card or something like that. But even on the papers, he doesn't fight enough. You mentioned the Cerrone fight. That was a year, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think at this level, with the way the game is evolving and his relative absence from it in a lot of ways, you got to fight at least twice, three times a year to kind of get in that mix. And, you know, it's, but I think it's part of the, you know, the old Marvin Hagler quote. He passed away this year, but that quote about the, you know, it's tough to get out of bed at 5:30 in the morning when you're sleeping in silk sheets or whatever that phrase was he used. You know, he's got a ton of money. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. More money. Yeah.
The best ability is availability.
Yeah.
So, you know, but to be fair, I think the intention when he came back and fought Cerrone was that he was going to fight three times that year, but then, you know, COVID hit and they couldn't really book him because it made no financial sense for UFC to pay him unless they could get a big gate.
Yeah.
You know, ESPN obviously would have wanted him, but, you know, it makes zero sense for UFC, and that's why we haven't seen John Jones fight.
True. Yep. And then, you mentioned this was in Abu Dhabi. They actually had some fans in attendance there. Yep. And of course, you know, financial considerations over there, a lot different than they are here. But this was a huge win and a great way to start the financial year for UFC. We flip to, Paul, this story I completely forgot about. I was reading through the various stories and headlines for this. And I was like, this is like a stalker situation. So Dana White. So at the time, as you mentioned, you know, they were talking maybe about this Poirier Chandler fight being for a interim lightweight title because Khabib Nurmagomedov was still the lightweight champion of the world, the rightful champion, but he hadn't retired yet. He basically said he was done, but he hadn't officially made the call. And Dana White said he was going to push Khabib to come back. And there was a ABC, the debut card on ABC in the afternoon. And the day before, I believe, Dana White said he was going to have an announcement at 3 p.m. on the future of Khabib Nurmagomedov. And this thing was like built up so like big, like, you know, Khabib was going to be there. It was going to be some sort of like, you know, okay, yeah, he's coming back to fight, you know, the winner of Poirier McGregor or something like that. And it turned out to be a big nothing burger. Dana White said that Khabib could return if, quote unquote, something spectacular happens at UFC 257. We later learned that he wasn't even going to be there at UFC 257. Yeah. So that was there. Later on, Dana White saying it doesn't sound positive that Khabib's going to come back. And he just keeps saying, you know, we thought Khabib versus McGregor 2 could have beat Mayweather versus McGregor in terms of pay-per-view guys. I don't know about that, but, you know, who knows? But I think it would have been a hard number to break, because that was obviously a ton of buys. There was the clip of, it was from Looking for a Fight, when, you know, Dana essentially just keeps talking about the McGregor fight. Like, they're watching one of these amateur fights, and Dana White just kind of like, be like, you know, trying to get him to come back. It was just, he really wasn't taking the hint, the clue. I mean, this is like one of those relationship type things where, yeah, you know, the girl's like already moved on. The guy's like, well, maybe give me one more chance. Give me one more chance. This was just really bizarre to look back on.
Yeah, she's just not that into you.
Just not that into you, right?
Yeah, I remember just being like kind of pissed off, because I went out of my way to watch, you know, this to make sure, like, I was going to watch a show anyways, but sometimes I skip through the stuff between the fights, and I was looking out for this, because it's like they built this up huge, and like you said, it was nothing. It was, you know, it was LeBron, you know, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach, or maybe not. You know, like, because that's what it was. It was basically, you know, him saying that, you know, no, there's nothing here. But if something happens, maybe there will be. But it was almost like my sense was that Khabib obviously did not want to come back. But I think that what he would have come back for was maybe a fight with GSP. But obviously that just wasn't going to happen. He didn't want to fight McGregor. He didn't want to fight Poirier. I don't think he wanted to fight Chandler. I think maybe he was interested in fighting Oliveira, because that was a new challenge for him. But the fact is that Dana didn't want to make that fight. So that's kind of where they were. And then he just kind of, he didn't really want to fight anyways. Like, after the previous fight that he had on Fight Island in, I think it was September of 2020, he just had, he was done. Like, he fought one more time, and then his dad had died, and he laid it, you know, as soon as that fight was over, you could just see it in his face, I'm done. And anybody that knows Khabib or knows anything about Khabib knows he was serious, and he wasn't going to quit unless he was really quitting. So this wasn't your standard MMA retirement. This was, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And not only that, I mean, if you even look at Khabib, he's going to have a tough time making middleweight, let alone lightweight. So, you know, and I think he's out of the testing pool. Like, he's done. And Dana just needed to get that out of his head and move on. And we had a lot of fun with this on our In the Clinch show, because Ryan's got some inside contacts in UFC, and he kind of knew exactly where this was going, and he even called it ahead of time. Like, you know, don't get all excited about this, because this is not much ado about nothing. And I don't even know why Dana's doing it, because he's got nothing. And that's what it ended up being. So,
yeah. Big fat nothing burger. Let's go to some of the rest of the headlines of the month. We'll do kind of this first chunk, and then we'll get into the second group here. So Dana White, this is some of the various comments he made. I think it was around 257, the same thing, but a little bit later. So some of his quotes. He was working on Colby Covington versus Jorge Masvidal. He has a surprise for illegal streamers this year, and there was one case for 257. He was asked about the post-event press conference, and he said, yeah, we're watching this guy's house. And it's like, this is what you have to spend your time on this thing. Like, it did this huge, huge number. Could have done better if ESPN probably didn't mess it up. And then, you know, we're watching this one guy's house. It just was very, very weird. Justin Gaethje versus Charles Oliveira was, quote unquote, probably next. Deiveson Figueiredo versus Bram Moreno 2 was being planned for either April or May. He said he was not counting on Nate Diaz fighting in the year ahead, but he would like it if it did happen. He was aiming for Weili Zhang versus either Rose Namajunas or Carla Esparza in Asia. And on the Spencer Fisher CTE piece that I talked to Steve Morocco on this very podcast about it, and it was just an excellent piece about a very, very sad story, and something I think we're going to hear a lot more of, and we have heard a lot more with fighters across the way, but, you know, boxing, MMA, what have you. He just said, well, you know, it's just part of the gig. So it's kind of like, okay, there can be something can be done with, you know, especially you look at years like this where UFC is doing so much in terms of revenue. There's been the talk ad nauseum about, you know, paying fighters better and so on. you know, there needs to be some sort of fund for these fighters that afterwards are having issues like this to help them through some stuff. And yeah, just, I think common sense, but it's one of those things where lawsuits have to happen in order to make that happen. You look at, you know, with NFL and the concussion lawsuits and things like that, it took legal action in order to get them to actually do the right thing. So, yeah, kind of an unfortunate comment there. We go to some events or events slash fights that were made for the months and ahead. We learned the first two UFC shows of 2021 are going to be held during the day. UFC 257 and other Fight Island shows are going to have limited spectators. Again, it's still in the apex at this point. So, but having any fans in attendance was like it's like a treat almost. You know, actually seeing them, it's just kind of a weird thing, like aliens or something. Again, we talked about UFC 257. It was announced that Chandler versus Hooker is going to be added to that card. It's going to be Chandler's debut. And this crazy story, Dan Hooker said quite the year overall. He had to stay in Abu Dhabi for a month after the fight due to COVID protocols. And this happened again, or he had some issues later on trying to even just to get to a fight, which we'll talk about in a later episode. This was a wild year for Dan Hooker, to say the least. Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis was set to headline at February fight night. Kamaru Usman defending his welterweight title against Gilbert Burns at 258. Peter Yan defending his bantamweight title against Aljamain Sterling at 259. We learned that Leon Edwards was going to take on Khamzat Chimaev on a March fight night show. Alexander Volkanovski was set to defend his featherweight title against Brian Ortega at UFC 260. Dana White was also talking about Stipe Miocic defending his heavyweight title against Francis Ngannou in that rematch. Looked at possible for UFC 260, and that John Jones was definitely going to fight the winner. Still waiting for that. Robert Whittaker against Paulo Costa set to main event in April. Darren Till set to main event against Marvin Vettori in April. A lot of these fights never happened. And then Yair Rosenstruck versus Ciryl Gane was rescheduled for a UFC Vegas 20 headliner. Thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, the Dana White going after streamers was interesting because, like you said, number one, this show did great buys. Number two, the bigger issue was the ESPN problems. But then the big thing is, what do they care about how many people get their pay-per-views? Like, they're getting a flat rate from ESPN anyways. So it should be ESPN that worried about the illegal streamers and not Dana White. So that was just kind of bizarre. I loved having fans back. Like, I was looking it up and I couldn't really remember which one it was exactly, but there was one fight very early on, and I'm pretty sure it was Fight Island. I know they did three shows there, and they had limited amount of fans at all three, but there was a lot of fans at 257. Like, it was like maybe, I think, 3,000, but it sounded like a full arena because we'd been so long since we'd heard fans. But there was one heavyweight fight where it was just like a knockdown drag out, and the fans were just going crazy, and it was like, oh my God, this was like music to your ears if you're a UFC fan, because you hadn't heard that in so long. And it was just, you know, we're kind of getting out of this, and we're still kind of getting out of it. And a lot of these fights that were planned, I've learned a long time ago to not even pay attention to what fights are coming up until we get really close to what's happening. Like, I swear, like, I do a show every week now, and when we're talking about the week coming, like, I look at the card the day we're doing the show. And if you ask me what's on next week, I have no idea. And I watch every week, and I follow this as close as most people, probably 95% of people out there. And if you ask me what the main event for the following week's show is, most of the time I have no idea. And I think that's just the way things are now, because things change so much. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should be paying closer attention. I don't know. But, you know, it's just the way things are. And I've learned not to get too excited about things. You know, like, we had this card that you're talking about next weekend, we, you know, originally had Masvidal fighting on it, and now we don't. So I'm just excited about what we actually do have, and I don't worry too much about what could have been and what didn't. But it's kind of fun when they announce these things at first, and, you know, to talk about it, and at least it gives you something to talk about, especially for people that are doing stuff like we're doing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. I actually like having some fights in front of no fans, just because you can hear the action a little bit
yes.
more.
Yeah,
it's I wish there would be a hybrid of better miking in the ring, so you could hear just some of the impact and things like that. But I think it's one of the, you know, one of the positives, these few positives of kind of the UFC, this you know, having made these changes, and obviously I think this Apex thing is here to stay.
We talked about this last year, and you had actually commented that you thought that they were going to end up doing some sort of a hybrid, and where we would have the shows, you know, the bigger shows in front of fans, and then the smaller weekly fight nights would be, you know, just in the Apex. And so far that's what we've got. Like, mm-hmm. I think they'd like to do some shows outside of the Apex, but I mean, to move all that stuff to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, or, you know, like, you know, some Lincoln, Nebraska, like, why not just keep it in the Apex? And now they're even selling tickets to the Apex, and they make a lot of money on those tickets. Like, I think it's like $2,500 to go in there, and then it's like a VIP experience type thing. So you can get like 500 fans in there. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and they're making money. It's Vegas. It's high rollers. Like, you know, and so as long as if they can do like $100,000 gate and not even have to move any of their stuff around, and they're making double digit, like, you know, eight figures on each of these fight night shows, but from ESPN, like, it's ridiculous how much money they're making and how little of it's going to the fighters. But I'm sure that'll come up at some point this year.
Yeah, they've they spent tens of millions on that facility. And they, you know, the idea at one point was to make that basically so there was fights going on there every single day, whether it was boxing, Thai kickboxing, MMA, you know, something like that. And they haven't obviously got to that point yet. But yeah, I mean, you have people coming in to Las Vegas, and it's kind of like almost like a, you know, Vegas show in a lot of ways. And I think it's, to your point, there's a cost in doing production. We hear about this, you know, we talk about WWE numbers, and that there's a cost when you go out on the road. There's revenue being made by ticket sales, but there's also, you know, there's a cost to it. And it's not like the NFL where, you know, the NFL picks up the cost, or the network picks up the cost. The Patriots and Bills are not paying the bill for putting on a game on Monday Night Football. You know, that's just part of this whole deal. And yeah, if you can do these fight nights from a central location, you have all the protocols set up and everything like that. It's basically like they have their own home field. And I can understand that. At some point with the international travel, you know, perhaps they look to maybe make another one of these facilities overseas if it makes more sense. You know, you could have split type of things, but, you know, maybe they're like, look, it's cheaper for us to fly these people in. And again, we control everything, and yeah, it's quite a thing they've done. And yeah, everything, these plans, these seeds that they planted years ago have sprouted, not only just, you know, little saplings, but giant oak trees. You know, it's wild. Yeah. Absolutely wild. Let's go over this this other chunk, and then we'll move on to February. Yep. So a couple of results here: UFC Fight Island 7 and Max Holloway, the aforementioned ABC card, dominating Calvin Kattar. This was Hal Holloway as best, brutalizing Kattar over five rounds, who stood in there. Could have been called earlier. Just messed up Kattar's face completely. Kattar finally coming back at some point soon. Carla Condit returning, edging out Matt Brown in a fight that feels like it could have been made 10 years ago. You know, I'm sure they tried to at one point. Yi Jing Lang, nice victory, knocking out the returning Santiago Ponzinibbio. UFC Fight Island 8, really the only fight here of note to me, Michael Chiesa decisioning Neil Magny. Tito Ortiz, quite a year for him. He was banned from this Huntington Beach council meeting for refusing to wear a mask. The residents and the council proposed a vote of no confidence to strip him of what's called his pro tem mayor status. And his year with that whole thing would continue to be more bizarre, as we'll talk about in a future show. Paige VanZant, now she's going to be headlining Knuckle Mania, which is a bare knuckle fighting championship pay-per-view for Super Bowl weekend. Anthony Pettis signs with the PFL after obviously a long stint in the UFC, winning a lightweight title. Pat Miletic lost his job after attending the Capitol riots on January 6th. The California State Athletic Commission and USADA were looking into revising their recreational drug guidelines. The results of that, obviously, we'll talk about in a future show. The Polar Bear, Paul Varlins, a UFC fighter and also a limited wrestler in ECW, Angle with Taz, died due to COVID. Fedor Emelianenko was hospitalized with COVID. Chris Weidman got COVID, and his Uriah Hall rematch was pushed back as a result. One fighting championship, they still exist. Demetrius Johnson, Eddie Alvarez, still fighting for them, and it was announced that they were going to be returning to TNT in April, a deal that just has not really helped out anyone at all in either case. Jake Paul versus Ben Askren. was announced for April, a boxing match. We'll get to that in a few minutes. Nick Lentz retired, a longtime UFC fighter, due to vision loss. Joe Biden, there were some questions on the travel restrictions affecting UFC Apex shows and fighters getting there and back and forth. That ended up not being that big of an issue, but it was a case for the international fighters, how they're going to get in and out. BJ Penn, his decline continues, had a DUI arrest, yelling swears, racial slurs, all that stuff's caught on video. Really sad what's happening to him. Mario Yamasaki wants back in to be a referee, even if it's not in the UFC. And Michael Chiesa was asked about it. He said, no thanks. Sports are better off without you. And then there was a strange thing between Megan Anderson and Casey Kenney. Casey Kenney was on Sean O'Malley's podcast and making kind of some lewd guy-like comments about Megan Anderson. That kind of caused a little bit of a stir. Had to retire and apologize, rather. And all that to Megan Anderson. That was kind of one of those weird headlines I remember from the year. Any thoughts on the rest of that chunk?
Well, Max Holloway, he's my favorite fighter, as anybody that's ever listened to me knows. And I was very, very impressed with his performance against Calvin Kattar. They both took damage, but, you know, Kattar, I mean, like you said, he still hasn't got back in the cage. He's scheduled for a fight that's basically on the one-year anniversary of that fight. And he's got Giga Kakadze, which is not going to be much easier for him. But that was just a great card and an outstanding performance by Holloway, early contender for fight of the year, even though it was a one-sided domination. The Paige VanZant, that actually led to me purchasing my first ever bare knuckle fighting show. And I will say that I really enjoyed the show. Not enough to buy it again, but I did enjoy it. What it reminded me of, and I didn't watch a lot of the early UFCs, but I heard about it and read about it. And, you know, I've even gone back and watched some of it, but it kind of had that feel of what the early UFCs must have felt like, because it was the outlaws. It was the Wild West. It was, you know, these people are out of their minds. And, and some of the interviews afterwards, like these people are, I don't know what they're on, but they're just out there. And we saw, God, who was it? Chris Lieben, fighting on this show, and he won, and then he retired, Paige lost in the main event. But she looked good enough that she got another main event, and she lost that one too a couple months later, but yeah, I was impressed, and I may check out another show again at some point. I meant to get the last one that she was on, and I just didn't think of it the day it was on, and then I didn't want to be bothered after. The polar bear Varellen's death was sad, and I feel like we're gonna probably see a lot more of these in the next few years from these early pioneers, because it's been like 30 years now, and they took a lot of punishment. But it did lead to some Dave Meltzer stories on Wrestling Observer Radio, including one that I'll never forget, Missy Hyatt saying she doesn't jobbers, which was funny. And I gotta say the one in TNT thing, I honestly thought this was gonna work. Like, you know, airing it right after AEW, I just thought that was perfect synergy. The style of one is different than UFC, and I thought it would lend itself. I thought the AEW fans would be into it, but it just did not work on any level. They were, you know, they were going from like, you know, close to a million people watching Dynamite to, you know, 300,000 watching directly after. You know, part of that's a time slot, but part of it is just they just weren't interested. And then they didn't get the right results either. Like, I think DJ and Eddie both lost. I know DJ lost, it was, you know, it just didn't work, unfortunately. And it's too bad. And I think that's just going to continue to be a money hole until they decide they don't want to lose any more money. So.
Yep. And when we get to next episode, we get to April. Alvarez did lose in a very strange fashion. I'm very excited to talk about that with you next episode. Speaking of next month, let's flip to February. This was really, you know, kind of the big news of this month was the continued emergence of Kamaru Usman as a dominant force in the welterweight division as champion, and the discussion about whether he was the greatest of all time in the division. And we'll talk about that in a second. But Kamaru Usman picking up a third round TKO win over Gilbert Burns. Looked great doing it. Survived, I believe, an early knockdown. And He just continued to look great, and yet another victory. Kelvin Gastelum returning and defeating Ian Heinisch. Alexa Grasso picking up a win over, once highly thought of prospect Macy Barber, who still is trying to kind of figure out what her deal is right now. She looked great before hitting this losing skid, and really kind of needs something. But this was a kind of a wake up call for her. Bobby Green's kidneys failed backstage, and he was pulled from his fight with Jim Miller, and then that was obviously rescheduled later on. And one of the fighters that won on the card called out Miley Cyrus for a date afterwards, kind of an awkward way possible. And Daniel Cormier thought this is absolutely hilarious. Kamaru Usman was talked about afterwards. Maybe they were looking for a Kamaru Usman Masvidal tough season as that series returned to no one cared. Kobe Covington claimed that Masvidal turned down a six-figure coaching gig on that, so we weren't really sure what was happening. And Dana White said afterwards it was undeniable that Kamaru Usman had surpassed GSP as a welterweight GOAT. And believe me, I'm not big into hyperbole and not big into got to take a breath and kind of see historically where guys fit. He's well on his path. If you look at some of the stats in terms of different opponents and champions and things like that, that they faced, GSP has simply fought different fighters and past champions more than Usman has. Usman has looked great, and we'll talk about him more throughout the year, but I'm not ready to anoint him the GOAT just yet. And I think we still need a little bit of time. He can definitely get there as well as ways. It's awesome fighter. But just to me, not ready to call him the GOAT just yet.
So I'll just go backwards here, because that last point was, we actually just had this discussion on our show, and I'm sorry I keep referencing it, but
no, go for it.
It's my go-to point. But you know what, I'll say we were doing like a point counterpoint thing. So Ryan took the side of GSP. So I just had to make the argument for Kamaru. And I will say, like, we're talking about after his last fight, which is two fights after this. So, he's beaten Burns, he's beaten Jorge Masvidal, and he's beaten Colby Covington for a second time. And now we're having that discussion, and there's a better case to be made for Kamaru now than there was in February. And for Dana White to make that comment in February is ridiculous. It's a little bit more credible now. What I'll say is, and this is not what you're talking about when you talk about the GOAT, but I will say that Kamaru Usman in his prime probably beats GSP in his prime. But the fact is the sport's evolved a lot since then. So you're trying to judge these people in their where they were at the time. So GSP was the greatest of all time in his era. And, and the guys he fought were the best of his era. And the thing is Kamaru he's fought the best, but it's not the same quality as what GSP had fought. So he's fought in a greater variety of opponents. GSP did, Covington's fought the same, Usman's fought the same guys over and over again. Like, he's fought Covington twice, he's fought Masvidal twice. And so it's not the same, but he's lost rounds, and GSP didn't lose rounds. But again, I think that's because the actual quality of fighting is so much better now. Like, a top 15 guy in UFC today would probably be a top 5 guy in 2010. Mm-hmm. It's just the way the sport's evolved. And that's just, there's nothing, but GSP was the best in his time. And I think Kamaru is eventually going to get there, and he's probably pretty close now. But for Dana to make this comparison, Dana's just, we've talked about this for years. Like, for some reason, Dana White's just, got it in for GSP, and yep, probably because he can't control him like he controls everyone else.
Yep. You get that.
Yeah.
Right.
The fighter that called out Miley Cyrus for a date was Julian Marquez.
Yeah.
And I love this guy. He was a former training partner of Tom Lawler, and, he's kind of cut from the same cloth. And so the deal was that he called her out for a date. She responded and said, if you shave your initials into your chest, my initials into your chest hair, I'll do it. And he said no. Like, he's an idiot. Like, he should have just done it. I mean, the publicity he would have got off of that would have been incredible. And all he's got to do is, the chest hair is going to grow back. You can put it on a shirt. He's an idiot. And then Usman, the main event of that pay-per-view, he just, he again just proved, that he is unquestionably the best welterweight in the world. I mean, he's undefeated, or well, he's 20-1, but you know, he's got that super long winning streak. And this show did not do great pay-per-view numbers, but it was a one fight show. I mean, you know, you had Usman and Burns, when Burns isn't even a very strong opponent. And then your co-main event was Alexa Grasso and Macy Barber. You know, and then it just goes down from there. So, I mean, you know, on paper, this might've been the weakest pay-per-view of the year, but, you know, it's, but the fact that it did any, I think it did like 250,000 buys, and that alone, you know, speaks to the fact that Usman is becoming a bit of a draw, and, you know, and he'd have some much bigger numbers later in the year. So yeah, big, you know, February for UFC. And I was really excited for the Usman Masvidal, but we ended up getting Usman Covington, and that was pretty cool too. I think, was that what we got?
I can't remember now. I honestly can't remember. No,
no, you know it? What? No, we got Volkanovski and Ortega.
Yes, that's right, what it was.
Which is nothing even close to this. So my bad. No, we'll I think they're talking about this again. I could be wrong, but.
Well, because after Masvidal pulled out of that the Edwards fight again.
Yeah.
At the pay-per-view is coming up this next Saturday. They were talking about, you know, it was basically, are they trying to angle for a much bigger fight between Masvidal and Covington instead, and that could lead into it. But yeah, I guess we'll kind of see how that plays out. Let's get into this first chunk here. And yeah, that was kind of like the really like most interesting kind of news of the month, but we'll get in some of these results and other headlines and get your thoughts. So UFC Vegas 18, Corey Sandhagen, as highlight reel walk-off flying knee knockout on Frankie Edgar. Used to not really seeing Frank Edgar like this, and he just laid him out flat. It was highlight reel again. This came off the Marlon Moraes victory as well. So this was, you know, Corey Sandhagen just showing he can get it done a variety of ways, and we'll talk about more about him in a minute. Beneil Dariush continuing with a really nice streak and will kind of, you know, elevate him a lot in the division in lightweight, defeating Diego Ferreira. And then main event, Alexander Volkov stopping Alistair Overeem in the second round TKO in what would be Overeem's final UFC fight. We'll talk about that in a minute. UFC Vegas 19, Derek Lewis knocking out Curtis Blaydes in the main event. Tom Aspinall submitting Andre Arlovski. I believe it was Arlovski's first submission loss, if I remember seeing the notes right. Big wins by this is kind of, you know, the changing of the guard. It's some interesting kind of new fighters. You know, Dawkins picking up a victory. I believe he's a heavyweight, if I'm remembering right. Yada Kunitskaya picking up a victory as well. Fighter missed weight by a record 11.5 pounds of Blade Salmon for the reason. Not Boston Salmon, the former fighter, but former UFC fighter, but Salmon, the actual food itself. And for the first time ever, a prelim bout, actually maybe not the first time ever, because thinking about the lead pipe slip in the back or whatever from Kevin Randleman back in the day, but prelim bout was canceled during the walkout. So Chaz Skelly was in the cage waiting for Jamal Emmers to come out. And Emmers got injured backstage, and the fight had to be called off. Again, one of those things I've never seen before. I don't know if we'll ever see it again. It was kind of one of those weird things to kind of look back in the year and be like, oh, yeah, that happened. UFC Vegas 20, another one-fight show, and this fight really wasn't that good either. Cyril Gane winning a very boring decision over Yaron Rosenstruck. Wins a win and put him in some good, obviously, situation later on with the year, but this fight was just really, really dreadful. Dana White calling out Gane afterwards, and I believe Rosenstruck as well. Roy McDonald saying he was open to a UFC return after his PFL run was done. Joe Rogan said he was not going to get vaccinated because he didn't feel like he had to. Charles Oliveira turned down a short notice fight with Michael Chandler at UFC 258. That would have been for the vacant lightweight title. PFL was announced they're going to be debuting on April 23rd, bringing their format back with Anthony Pettis to debut on their show. James Vick, former UFC fighter, hit the regional scene. Retired after a brutal knockout loss and put out something on Instagram. It was kind of, you know, sad when you kind of hear these mid to lower card guys come out and, you know, kind of explain why they're retiring and realizing they don't really have a lot to show for it after, the brutality of the sport they're in. Tons of COVID pullouts. I could have put every single name here. Would have taken a while, but lots of cards having to change. Main events, co-mains, all throughout the card. COVID pullouts of protocols. Positive tests, all this stuff. Vitor Belfort, he was still talked about as being in one fighting championship, called out Chris Jericho for a fight, among all people. Very strange. Paige VanZant, we talked about this a minute ago, losing her bare-knuckle debut against Britton Hart. And he mentioned Chris Lieben retiring after a knockout win, later saying he would come back if he could fight Jake Paul. So there you go there. Jose Canseco, I put this in here just because it's a funny headline. He fought for Rough and Rowdy, which is a Barstool Sports, basically amateur tough man type thing that they put out on pay-per-view. And Canseco lost in like, I think it was like 20 seconds. He was accused of taking a dive, made a shit ton of money for it. It was just, kind of pathetic. And then UFC, it was first started to kind of float out there that they were looking at McGregor versus Dustin Poirier 3 for the summer. Paul, thoughts on any of the first chunk there?
Yeah, the Sanhagen knockout was scary. We'd never seen Frankie Edgar, kind of knocked out like that. And he had another kind of scary knockout later in the year, too. So I hate seeing the older fighters that happening, too. I'm always reminded of, guys like Chuck Liddell and stuff like that. And you just don't want these guys to fight longer than they should. The prelim bout that was canceled. The other one I remembered was there was one involving Matt Mitrione and Stefan Struve, I think, because I was actually there and the fight was canceled and we were like in the crowd waiting for the fight and it just never happened. And then after the fight, I think Matt Mitrione had come out or something, and then Derek Lewis was at ringside and he was like calling, he wanted to fight him like right then, or I think there was a show the next day and they were like, they were wanting to fight, and then they just obviously never made that fight.
Yep.
Yeah, that was in Vegas on fight week. So there was, yeah, that was when they used to do the two or three shows back to back to back. Yeah, the Oliveira, I think this might be the one that I was actually talking about earlier where they were going to do like a interim title fight. And Oliveira is just like, no, I need more time. And, stuff like that is not doing him any favors with UFC, unfortunately. So I feel like we're going to end up with another GSP situation there with him and Dana White. PFL debuting. Wow. They had such a great roster lined up for this season. And I really do like their shows. I love the sports presentation that they do, and they've got a great platform. They're on ESPN2 and ESPN+, but their results just couldn't have been worse. And some of the fights were like really bad. Like there's a lot of decisions and it was unfortunate. You can't control that. Right. And, Anthony Pettis, I think he lost twice. And, they signed him to this huge contract and he just did nothing. Rory McDonald didn't do nothing. Fabricio Verdum, right, lost his, he actually won, but we'll probably talk about that later. So it was, not a very good year for some of the minor promotions. Other than that, not much else. I mean, hey, this one time UFC looking at McGregor Dustin for the summer, we actually got that one. So yay. Mm-hmm.
Look at that. Yeah. Let's go over the rest of the month then. Daniel Strauss, former Bellator champion, was accused of stabbing a woman in the abdomen. This is just a story that continued to degrade throughout the year. Bellator, we haven't really talked about them at all because they were off. They announced their big move to Showtime and moving from where the hell were they before?
DAZN.
Oh, that's right. DAZN. Oh, DAZN and Paramount Network. That's what I'm thinking.
Paramount Network, Home of Combate Americas.
Bellator. So they announced their move to Showtime. This is kind of a surprise announcement. Actually, I think it'd be kind of been rumored for a while that might make a lot of sense. But Showtime getting back in the MMA game, they announced this light heavyweight Grand Prix and then a fight we still never saw, which was Yoel Romero versus Rumble Johnson. Bellator announced a double title fight event for Pitbull versus Manuel Sanchez too, and then Juan Archuleta versus Sergio Pettis for the bantamweight title. That was a show that's going to be coming up. There was a controversy with Gina Carano with her basically comparing Republicans being persecuted to the Holocaust, which obviously not good. She was fired from the Mandalorian and also from a spinoff show that's being developed from her. So she just really blew it for herself there. She ended up signing with a conservative led group led by Ben Shapiro, who's a podcast host and all that. Later in a press conference, Dana White defended her, basically just saying kind of leave her alone, and said he was pathetic or gross how Ariel Helwani made it all about him, because Ariel put out a video, because Ariel is Jewish, and just kind of put out like, he had talked to Carano a ton in the past. So it was disheartening to see that stuff. And, Dana White, obviously his love for Ariel Helwani is no longer existing. And Ariel was with ESPN at the time. And so, yeah, it was just kind of the usual mess. Dana was, Dana was still adamant that Khabib was champ, and Khabib later said it's time for the division to move on. So again,
she's
he just
can't not that into you.
Just can't quit him. Just can't quit him. Khamzat Chimaev pulled out of a Leon Edwards fight due to lingering COVID symptoms. UFC at the time was looking at Edwards versus Covington for a number one contender fight, possibly. That ended up turning into Bilal Muhammad stepping in instead, and we'll talk about that as we get to March. Brian Caraway, the former Mr. Tate, charged with forgery and stealing an ATV from Misha Tate. This is kind of quite a headline. UFC cut 20-plus fighters over the course of the month. No one really of note to that extent, but yeah, different cuts. And again, when you have 600 people under contract, that stuff is going to happen. Bellator announced that they were launching an independent divisional and pound-for-pound rankings, which, you know, they kind of exist. I don't hear anyone ever talk about them at all, so, you know, whatever.
Oh, I do.
Oh, you do? Okay. All right. We'll get that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jake Hager was in their rankings for the longest time, and he'd, like, move up and down randomly, and I would always just make the joke, like, that they're basing it on his AEW Dark results right. Because he didn't fight in Bellator all year, and he kept moving up and down the rankings. These rankings are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyways, go on.
Yeah, so UFC announced they were doing a partnership with TikTok. Stefan Struve, we just talked about him, retired from MMA due to medical reasons. Holly Holm versus Juliana Pena was being planned for a main event. Kamaru Usman versus Masvidal 2 was close to being confirmed. Valentina Shevchenko returning to defend her title against Jessica Andrade at UFC 261. Figueiredo versus Moreno 2 was indeed set for UFC 263. Sage Northcutt was announced as returning, taking on Shinya Aoki at an April 1 event. Travis Fulton, a longtime journeyman MMA fighter, indicted on child porn charges. So, yeah, I'd like that. Edson Barboza, after talking about free agency and looking forward to getting there after one more fight in his contract, ended up just re-signing with the UFC. And then Frank Mir, taking on Antonio Tarver, former boxing champion, on the Jake Paul Ben Askren undercard, another fight that would never happen with a Frank Mir. Thoughts on any of that?
Just occurred to me, Frank Mir boxing there? Wasn't Michael Tarver? Didn't he wrestle in WWE and he was supposed to be like Antonio Tarver's kid, or maybe he actually was, or something? Or am I completely making that up?
Michael Tarver was in NXT. I don't remember any association with Antonio Tarver. I think it would have been like the same age because both guys are
okay.
I thought
okay. Yeah. I for some reason I thought no. There's no way they're the same age. Like Antonio Tarver's pretty old. I think I could be wrong.
Well, I'll look it up while you talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So bookending with Travis Fulton and Daniel Strauss is just kind of shows, you know, unfortunately, some of the people I get into UFC are probably not the best. Bellator going to Showtime. This was we had a lot of talk about this in our fight game group because some people thought, oh, you know, this is great for Bellator and but much bigger platform and everything. And, my co-host Ryan was, you know, no, nobody's going to watch this. It's not 2010 anymore. And he was right. These shows are not being viewed by anybody. They had the one big fight they had this year was Pitbull and Antonio or AJ McKee. And the main event did like 150,000 viewers, and they're most weeks they don't even crack the top 150 on cable. They were doing bigger audiences on MTV2, back in like 2009 when they were on there. They just keep falling, and I don't know how much longer that company can keep going. I'm glad we finally talked about Khamzat here because, you know, he was a big story like at the end of last year, and then leading into this year, they kept trying to book that fight with Leon Edwards. And then, you know, and then at one point he retired because, you know, due to his lingering COVID symptoms, he thought he was going to die at one point. And then, you know, and they started to get better. And now we just recently saw him return and he's looking really good. You know, he looked really good in his last fight. And then you brought up Bilal Muhammad stepping in, and I think like that's almost rumored that might be a fight coming up at some point, Khamzat and Bilal Muhammad. So the UFC cutting fighters was a big topic. I think you said here they cut 20 plus, and I think the idea at the time was there was a list of like 50 that they were looking at cutting, and it's basically like guys that are kind of in the, you know, tail end of their careers with big names that are making big contracts that aren't really winning that much anymore, essentially. So if you're like a big name that, used to be, in the top 10 and you aren't anymore and you're not winning, you're probably going to get cut. is essentially kind of, it's the ongoing thing now, because for UFC, like if you got a guy making 50 grand for a show and you can bring in a guy making 12 and 12 that, you know, on a 3-fight contract, you know, for them, it makes much more sense to go with the younger guys. And they've got all these different things, Dana White's Contender Series, you know, looking for a fight, The Ultimate Fighter, where they're just, they've got this pipeline of guys coming in, and then, and they're making names and making no money, and they can bring these guys in and people are excited about them. And then, you know, you're Ryan Baders and your, you know, Anthony Rumble Johnson and Romero and Luke Rockhold and all these guys, you can, they have no incentive to keep them because they don't care if anybody buys the pay-per-views. They're still making their money. So I think we're going to get a lot more of this going forward before, it, unless they get a union, which they won't.
Never, yeah, that'll never happen. So going to the Tarver family, Paul. Okay. So Antonio Tarver's 53. And Michael Tarver, whose real name is Tyrone Evans, is 44.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, maybe younger brother.
Yeah, and Antonio would have been having to be pumping things out early in his life.
So he was just basically based on kind of Antonio Tarver, not necessarily like they weren't promoting him as being related or anything, I would imagine.
I'm looking at Wikipedia. I don't see...
Okay.
I don't see any mention of Antonio Tarver on here.
They can't be using that name just by... Yeah, maybe. Maybe they were.
They put it in the WWE name generator. That's what they did.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know what? What's his real name?
What did I just say? Tyrone Evans, I think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a better name. Jeez. But yeah, then they don't own it. So who cares? We're talking about a guy that
I know. A cup of coffee. Michael Tarver. Yeah. Michael Tarver coming up on the year-end MMA show.
Frank Mir won, I think. So
good. Yeah, we'll talk about that more. Yeah. But it wasn't against Antonio Tarver, and we'll talk about that in just a second.
Yeah.
So let's finish off the first quarter of the year with March, and this was at two successful UFC pay-per-views. We had UFC 259 and UFC 260. We'll start with 260 because we love the big guys. Francis Ngannou winning the heavyweight title with his no doubt knockout victory over Stipe Miocic. This was completely different than their first encounter, which I was live for in Boston, which was a lot different. This is just coronation. Ngannou had been this awesome run to get back. A lot of people were interested to see, would it be the same game plan? But Ngannou, he blitzed him. Miocic held his own. This wasn't, I don't believe it was a first round knockout, but this was a no doubt. When he connected, you could tell that Miocic was hurting a little bit more than the first time. This was completely different, it wasn't overwhelmed, any of that type of stuff. This was Francis Ngannou at his best, winning the heavyweight title with a knockout over Stipe Miocic, who we still haven't seen back yet in the cage. Also on this show, Miranda Maverick picked up a win, an interesting female name emerging on the scene on the undercards. Sean O'Malley returning, and Vicente Luque picking up a victory, submitting Tyron Woodley. This would be Woodley's final fight in the UFC. And this was also, we're talking about fans, this was the final pay-per-view at the Apex. And then the John Jones drama began. And when I say the John Jones drama, no, not with the legal authorities, Paul, but with this, you know, we just talked about, Dana said that John Jones is going to be the next opponent for Francis Ngannou. And then there was talk about, again, the money, the contract, what are you going to pay? And he said Jones was not going to take $8 million to fight Francis Ngannou. Derek Lewis said he would take $8 million to fight Francis Ngannou. But this was just this song and dance of the UFC not wanting to pony up for it. We've talked about this whole episode and past episodes. UFC has all the control, and they're like, this is what we're going to pay for this fight. And Jones is like, I'm not doing that. So UFC is like, okay, just sit home and wait. We have to offer you fights three times a year, whatever it is, contractually. We're going to do that. And we still haven't seen this fight, and we're now getting heading toward a Francis Ngannou Cyril Gane fight instead. And why don't we start with that? But sure. Just the victory itself was great. It's a shame we haven't seen there was more of a contract dispute with Ngannou down the road. This is a great coronation, and it just kind of soured over the year just because of UFC finances.
Yeah, I mean, I remember coming out of this, like, everyone was so excited for, an Ngannou-Jones fight. Like, that's all anybody wanted to see. You could have sold out a stadium with it probably off the momentum of that. And if they were looking at the summer for something like that, that would have been perfect. And, this stuff with Jones and then later with Ngannou, and they wanted him to fight in that second show in Houston. And it wasn't so much, I don't think, contract details as just that he wanted another month to prepare. And they needed a main event for that show on that weekend. And he, you know, that was too soon for him. So it just didn't happen. I've heard rumblings that there's more going on with this John Jones situation than just contract. And it might be like a situation like Michael Jordan with the NBA, you know, where there's like a super secret suspension going on that nobody's ever going to talk about. I don't know if that's true or not. So I don't want to get too much into that, but I think we're going to see Jones back again. For me, it seems the obvious thing to do would be that ESPN is going to have to kick in some money. I just don't know if that's something that they're willing to do, or if they want to set that precedent. Or the other thing would be if they can fight in a stadium or on a sold show, like an Abu Dhabi, like similar to Conor, because just a regular show like UFC, if they can sell out a stadium or an arena with, whatever, two random main eventers, Kamaru Usman, Israel Adesanya, whatever, why do they need to pay John Jones $25 million to fight, or whatever it's going to take? And then there's even some conjecture about what they've offered him and what he says they've offered him and what they say they've offered him. And I'm sure the real number is somewhere in between those two. But and Woodley, like, man, I know when you're doing your wrestling show and you're talking about, oh, I can't believe that happened this year. I can't believe Woodley was still in the UFC this year, because it feels like we haven't seen Tyron Woodley in like 3 years. And then when he had that fight, with Jake Paul, like, that was this year. So, he went from UFC, fighting a top UFC, welterweight, to going right into, whatever boxing, I guess, quote unquote boxing with Jake Paul, and good for him. I mean, he finally made some money. So, although, I guess even that, like, Dana's saying that he didn't make as much to fight Jake Paul as he made for some of his UFC fights, but who knows? Only Dana and Tyron know the truth there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then we flip to earlier in the month, UFC 259 did over 800,000 buys globally.
Yeah.
Jan Błachowicz defending against Israel Adesanya, champion versus champion. Just Błachowicz is at that time light heavyweight title on the line, and Jan giving Adesanya his first defeat. And this was, it was a tactical fight. I wouldn't say it was the most exciting, but it was obviously historic in a lot of ways. And people kind of wondering, would this set up an Adesanya Jones fight down the road and everything? And Jones is obviously chirping a lot on Twitter. The tweet and delete I saw a lot going through headlines. He would say that, towards everyone. But, so Błachowicz, cementing himself as the man at 205 and defeating Adesanya. Wasn't a lot of, like, a vitriol going into this. It was kind of just seeing, could Adesanya really ascend the throne to be even a bigger kind of name than he had grown into. And it was not to be against Błachowicz. Aljamain Sterling, quote-unquote, win over Peter Yan for the bantamweight title due to an illegal knee strike. And Aljamain Sterling taking home the title on a disqualification victory. It was one of those things where kind of left a sour taste in people's mouths, and people kind of realized, like, yeah, this is just how the sport is, and this is the rules. But how Sterling kind of acted after the fact, people are like, well, I think he turned him into a sympathetic face, and he kind of turned himself into a little bit of a heel. And we're going to see this fight pretty soon, I would hope. Sterling recovering for some nerve damage and what have you. But yeah, I was really looking forward to this because I think a lot of Sterling, I thought he's got that crossover appeal, and this fight just kind of just tainted it. He's a champion, but just the way it went about it. So it's within the rules, but just didn't really sit that well with anybody. And then Amanda Nunes, continuing her impressive run at probably the soon to be abolished women's featherweight division whenever she retires, submitting Megan Anderson, and then Rakic and Dom Cruz picking up victories on the undercard here. And then after this, they were talking about Juliana Pena being next for Amanda Nunes because the Holly Holm fight was scrapped, we just talked about, due to injury from Holm. And then Glover Teixeira was talked as being next for Jan Błachowicz, and we'll talk about that fight on a later episode.
Yeah, nice big show for them. I think this proves that Israel Adesanya is becoming a draw, that's good for, I guess, ESPN. the Sterling Jan obviously was a big disappointment. There was some controversy too, because people thought that Sterling was playing it up a little bit, which I don't actually believe, but that's what they're saying. You know, some big wins. Nunez, it's unfortunate that she's dominated this division, and really even bantamweight. Like, there's zero contenders for her at featherweight, and there's like maybe two at bantamweight, and obviously Pena is one of them, and Pena's got the biggest mouth in MMA, but I'm not sure if, you know, her fighting ability will back it up. I guess we'll see that soon. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of her. So.
Especially on commentary.
Oh, yeah. I just stopped listening a long time ago, so I don't really talk about that anymore. And the one thing I find funny, every time I see it, like, you've got in the notes here, Blakovic defends against Adesanya in a 205 title fight. And when you think of these two guys, and 205, and I always just come back to WWE, and they're, you know, 205 live. And when you look at the UFC's version of people that are 205 and WWE's, it's like, I don't get it, because these are big boys, you know, Blahovic, and you got the little dudes in WWE, and they're all 205. So anyways, that's that.
That's kind of funny. Yeah. I didn't really think of it that way. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, so Megan Anderson, we just talked about her, no longer under UFC contract after this fight, so she was done, and at this point, I believe, is still a free agent all these months later. Paulo Costa claims he was drunk on wine before he fought Adesanya. Ugh. That got a lot of eye rolls from people. Khamzat Chimaev thought he was done due to COVID. He was battling COVID this whole time, and thought he was done, just in Dana White saying, you know, he's not done. You know, so he's not going to let one of his future stars retire that easily. And then the Chechenian director there, or the head of Chechnya, who was just a terrible person, it was pressure from him. So Chimaev ended up coming back and looked great doing it, but there were some thoughts that he might be done due to COVID, which bummed a lot of people out, given his awesome 2020. McGregor was bought out of his Proper 12 ownership, his whiskey company he co-founded, and was made even more rich because of it. I don't have the numbers, but it was a lot of money. Junior Dos Santos, end of an era, Paul. Junior Dos Santos, Alistair Overeem, cut from the UFC. JDS had turned down a short notice fight at UFC 260 that was kind of pointed to as a potential reason for that. Dana White saying there was nothing, you know, going on behind the scenes. That was a reason both those guys were cut. You know, name value aside, you know, I think we both kind of could understand why they were cut, just based on performance, especially, you know, JDS and heavyweights, older guys getting knocked out all the time is not good. Cody Garbrandt and his son were kicked off a Southwest flight due to his 2-year-old not wearing a mask and him refusing to do that. That's a headline from the month. Dana White wanted full capacity Texas shows ASAP. And he said it was, quote unquote, unfortunate, frustrating. They wouldn't bend to his will. I mean, they wouldn't allow it. And then UFC 261 was heading to Florida with a full house with three title fights, which we'll talk about at a later time. UFC and DraftKings, again, more money for UFC, announcing a $350 million partnership for that betting app. Dana White said that TJ Dillashaw, upon his return, was going to be set for a number one contender fight, and later was learned it was going to be the aforementioned Corey Sandhagen. Very earned opportunity there. Dan Hardy was fired by the UFC and BT Sport after an incident on Fight Island, which I believe Dave Meltzer actually broke in the Wrestling Observer, of all people, which was kind of, he doesn't really break a lot of MMA news, but it was just this line in there that got picked up. And yeah, and Dan Hardy, longtime UFC fighter and commentator, was fired. Dominic Cruz went off on this this Monster Energy executive. I'm blanking on his name. I should have jotted it down. But
oh, yeah,
there was this big thing and a lot of fighters saying, yeah, the Monster Energy people and this guy in particular are terrible to deal with. So that was an interesting thing, because Monster Energy has been a longtime MMA sponsor and kind of just revealing this weird dark side of the sport. So that was the story that came out. Rose Namajunas versus Weili Zhang for Zhang's then title, strawweight title, was set for UFC 261. Dana White said he was going to bet $1 million on the Askren versus Paul fight. And Snoop Dogg later challenged him to a bigger money bet. And then Tony Ferguson versus Beneil Dariush was announced for UFC 262. Thoughts on any of that?
I was trying to rack my brain to think about who that guy was on the Dominic Cruz thing. I remember when watching that, like, it was a post-fight interview. And
yes,
I and probably 90% of the people watching had no idea who he was talking about. And so we had a conversation on In the Clinch, and then Ryan gave me the whole rundown of what this was all about. And of course, you know, this was 9 months ago, so I can't remember any of it.
Hans Mollenkamp.
Yes. It sounds like a Simpsons character. So that's why I was like, what is he talking about? And McGregor being bought out of Proper 12, I believe that was nine figures. Like, so he made a lot of money off of that. And then, you know, and again, go back to your quote from who did you say with Michael Spinks about, you know, it's hard to get out of satin sheets.
Oh, Marvin Hagler.
Marvin Hagler. Okay. Yeah, that was close.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun with the Paulo Costa. Paulo Costa is like, you know, giving Tito Ortiz a run for his money for Bonehead of the Year on a few things. You know, he had that incident with Adesanya. He later decided he was going to take a year off because he needed to get hair plugs and then ended up fighting like 3 months later. So I guess the hair plugs took. Although I will say when I watched him fight, I couldn't stop staring at the bald spot. So I'm actually thinking he maybe didn't get the hair plugs, which I never even noticed it before. So, you know, I don't know. Megan Anderson no longer under contract is funny because I think they had like three featherweights under contract. So now they have two. And I don't even know why they bother with the division anymore, but they keep, you know, they keep having, they just had a featherweight fight, like not that long ago, a couple weeks ago. It just won't die. It's like, I don't even know what to describe, what to compare it to, but I think, you know, it's a nice visual for Amanda Nunes every time she comes out and fights and she has those two belts. And
yeah,
I don't think anybody's ever beating here for either one of them.
No.
The UFC, and they just keep falling into money. And, you know, with that DraftKings partnership, $350 million and, you know, on the ESPN deal and the pay-per-views and then meanwhile, you know, again, none of it goes to the fighters because Endeavor is losing so much money that UFC is basically propping them up. So, I wanted to mention the, Junior and, Overeem getting cut because that's, you know, goes back to what I talked about in the last section. You know, big names that, you know, no longer have any value to UFC, but they both kind of moved on to do different things. Like JDS is doing wrestling now and seems to be pretty good at it and having fun. And Overeem is doing the celebrity boxing deal. And again, you know, he's actually got some skills. So we'll see what happens with him. I was actually hoping he might fight Fedor on that Bellator card, which we'll talk about later in the year. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
Was not to be. Yeah. Let's go this last section then and wrap things up. UFC Vegas 21 results. Leon Edwards finally returning after this long absence. Poor guy. Fighting Bilal Muhammad. Fight ends in a no contest due to an accidental eye poke by Edwards. This was just watching this. This is like the ultimate Debbie Downer. Womp womp. Like this, I feel so bad for Leon Edwards. Has been so screwed over, not even of his own accord, just being stuck over there in England during the pandemic. And then he finally gets an opportunity to fight, have a showcase fight, and he accidentally pokes Muhammad's eye. And you know, Muhammad has been calling for this rematch ever since, and you know it's just not going to happen at this point. Edwards is kind of on to bigger and better things, which we'll talk about later. Ryan Spann took out Mirko Sirkunov in the first round. There was also a quick Dan Ige win on this show as well. Israel Adesanya revealed he dreams of being a WWE star. Again, maybe he could get on 205 Live in the future. Who knows? UFC was working on Michael Chandler versus Justin Gaethje. That would obviously happen a lot later in the year, but there was some talk about that early in the year. Calvin Gastelum replaced Paulo Costa. We just talked about him on the that fight against Robert Whittaker that was scheduled for April in the main event. Khabib never died. Khabib met with Lorenzo Fertitta, and there was a little bit of a tease of a UFC return. However, he retired, finally announced it, done. And UFC announced Chandler versus Oliveira for the vacant UFC lightweight title at UFC 262 in Houston. So Dana was going to get his wish there with a full house in Houston, Texas. Cody Garbrandt versus Rob Font headliner was announced for May 22nd. Volkanovski was out of his UFC 260 fight with Brian Ortega due to COVID. UFC Vegas 22 results. Derek Brunson took a decision. Or a Kevin Holland, and a strange fight for Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland kept talking during the fight and just didn't really seem to be into it. There was a lot of talk after about his performance. And, you know, he was one of those guys who was kind of really on the rise because he seemed to fight every other month and was winning and took a big step back as the year progressed. Anderson Silva was in talks for a boxing fight with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. That was made official later in the month for a pay-per-view. Misha Tate, we just talked about her. She came out of retirement. Of course, everyone does. For the UFC and was announced as fighting Marion Renault. Oscar De La Hoya announced he was returning, and the reason I put this in here is because he was targeting a quote-unquote big-name former UFC fighter. We later learned that was GSP. He was looking to box, but UFC said, no, we're not allowing you out of the contract to do that, which is just crazy. They can still do that. Endeavor, just talked about them, bought out the remaining UFC owners so they could take 100% control of the company, keep all those profits for themselves. McGregor Poirier 3 was looking like UFC 264 on July 10th. That was the buzz back in March. Darren Till had to be pulled from his UFC main event against Marvin Vettori due to injury. Nate Diaz versus Leon Edwards. We just talked about him. He got a nice break here. Set for a rare UFC. It was at UFC 262. Set for a 5-round co-main event. And we'll talk about that in a future episode, how that turned out. And then the Reebok deal, Paul, finally had this all this long time, the Reebok UFC deal in terms of everything above the ankles was over.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a ton there, but I'll just talk about a couple of the things. The Kevin Holland, he was actually my pick for 2020 Fighter of the Year. You know, he won 5 times. Which not a lot of people have ever done in UFC, going back to the early days. And what was happening here was he's moving up the card, and he's way too small to fight at middleweight. And he'd even talked about moving down to welterweight, but he keeps, you know, he likes to take these fights on short notice. And not only that, they're putting him against wrestlers. So, you know, Derek Brunson is an underrated wrestler, and he just kept taking him down. And then people figured out the game plan. And I think he fought somebody else similar to that later, and now he is finally moving down to welterweight, so you know, maybe we'll see some better things from him in 2021. The Miesha Tate coming out of retirement, I've always been a big fan of hers, and I was actually inspired to write an article, which, you know, other than ratings, I didn't do a ton of writing this year, so people want to check that out. It was just basically kind of a career retrospective of Miesha Tate and what might be, you know, on the horizon for her. You can just search Miesha Tate, Paul Fontaine, Fight Game Media, and you'll find that on the Fight Game Media site. And other than that, the Nate Diaz, yeah. The 5-round, I remember when I heard about this, I was, you know, I'm sure like everyone, I was like, what? Like, why? And then, you know, later in the year, we'd get Nick Diaz coming back and doing a 5-round, you know, main event that, or not a main event, third from the top. So I guess, you know, in the UFC, you have 5-round fights. If it's the main event, if it's a title fight, or if your last name is Diaz.
Right.
The Diaz rule. Yeah. And I have a feeling we're going to see more of that because, you know, I think for them, I think that they feel like that's, you know, they've got such great cardio that that might be the one advantage, although it didn't really work out for either one of them. But that is, you know, actually in this case, you know, if it had gone 6 rounds, Nate Diaz might have won, but we'll get into that later. Maybe not. And Reebok deal being over, I think they're getting more money now from Adidas. I do know the uniforms look a lot better. And I think the fighters even say they fit better and they have a lot more options, you know, to have some little bit of individuality in them. So I think, you know, Reebok, you know, it was fine for what it was, but it got them to where they are now, which I think the fighters, I think everybody's, the fans, everyone's more happy with the current deal. So.
With Venom. Yep. With
Venom. Oh, Venom. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes. NHL is Adidas and they were Reebok before. So right. That's where I got mixed up there.
Yeah. So quite a 3 months, obviously, new champions get, some belts being vacated, champions being, solidified, and we have some
fans are coming back.
Fans are about to come back. Yeah. We got a lot to talk about here with the other remaining 9 months. The UFC is making a ton of money. That's a theme that'll stay consistent, but yeah, it's going to be, it's a fun episode, and we'll talk more about the other 9 months. We'll start with the next 3 months chunk in about a week or so. Paul, before I let you go, I'll give you another chance to go ahead and plug where people can hear you, read you, feel you, sure. Watch you. The floor is yours.
Sure. At Paul A. Fontaine on Twitter, hosts the In the Clinch, the MMA podcast, which is now on the free tier of the Fight Game Media Network. So all your major podcast platforms, you can just search Fight Game Media. We're mixed in with a bunch of other shows on that feed. So, you know, you don't just get our show, you get a boxing show, you get a couple wrestling shows, and it's all free. And then I'm also on the Fight Game Media Patreon still with the Dynamite Show, which I co-host with Jeff Hawkins, who some of you may know from the F4W board at Crap Game, longtime voice of Shake Them Ropes on Voices of Wrestling. So we've been doing that show for about, I've been doing the show for 9 months. My former co-host Parker Klein does writing for F4W, but I now have Jeff as my co-host, and we have a lot of fun with that show, just breaking down AEW Dynamite. And then I do occasional special shows on the Patreon, you know, just going over pay-per-views, UFC and AEW. So you can check all those out. And then the written work, obviously, F4W, just about every day I got some sort of ratings article because there's so many shows now. And then Fight Game Media, I do a weekly kind of ratings wrap-up on Thursdays or Fridays. So you can check that out as well.
Sounds good. All right, Paul, I appreciate you fitting me into your busy schedule.
Yeah, and always look forward to this every year.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. We'll talk. We'll plan talking next week for April, May, and June. All right. Big thanks to all you guys for dropping by. Thanks for Paul Fontaine. Thanks for Paul Fontaine. Yeah, thanks for him coming into our lives. Yeah, big thanks to him for doing the first episode, and obviously the subsequent three that will be coming out here over the next month plus. If you're enjoying the Year Review Pro Wrestling series, April has been recorded, and that will be coming out in just a couple days. May will also be coming out this week as well, and then it looks like, MMA Part 2, April, May, and June will be coming out, hopefully, over the weekend as well. So, yeah, 16 podcasts in about a month and a half. There's a lot going on. But we're going to get it done. It's a lot of fun looking back in this. So I hope you guys are having fun with this. Well, if you like the series, please share it on social media, retweet, tell your friends, tell your relatives, share it on the board, whatever you want to do. Let's get some more people listening to this. This is a fun look back at history, and I greatly appreciate the time you're spending with it or with any of the great podcasters here at WrestlingObserver.com, but especially me. That's what I'm going to say. Give thanks for me this time of year, right? So that's about it. So until next time, which will be really just in a couple days, thanks to Paul. Thanks to all of you. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.